Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R.
Everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 10 of Survivor Heroes vs. Villains. We have reached yet another merge episode, and it is a biggin' as heroes and villains come together. Will they be the hillins? Will they be the all villains or just yin yang? All is not in Zen as JT goes down in flames, as the title says. And we are here to play some games out of one of the most legendary episodes in Survivor history, from one of the most legendary seasons in Survivor history. Of course, I am Mike Bloom, and I am joined by my debaucherous little co-host, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm great. And you know what? Call me a villain, but this is a hero of a season. Am I right?
What?
I don't know, man. There's not many puns I could do with heroes versus villains.
You could say, like, where there's a villain, there's a way.
What?
You know, like, where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes. No, I'm very familiar with the phrase.
Maybe if you abbreviate villains to just vill, maybe that helps, like, expand your repertoire of puns.
Where there's a vill, there's a veg. Yeah, yeah, I just feel like I have an accent.
Yeah, like if you're a vampire. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like someone like Rupert, who is so this stoutly a hero, would define a vampire as a villain without any shades of gray.
Ooh, there's a vill, there's a vay. Yes,
I don't like vampires.
Rupert's like, I've covered myself in garlic.
Oh my God. I'm so excited to get into this episode. Heroes versus Villains is a really incredible season for a number of ways. I mean, first, we're sort of on the other side of the 10-year anniversary of the season. We just celebrated the 40th season, and this was the 20th. It brought together so many legendary characters and had a legendary episode with a move that once upon a time, Josh Wiggler said was the best tribal council of all time, with Parvati's double idol play and JT essentially getting screwed over by his own idol that he gave away to Russell in the previous episode. Liana, what are your thoughts about this episode, especially, I guess, in the entire spectrum that is heroes versus villains?
So a little bit of context to when I watched this episode, because, you know, the Big Brother preseason is blowing up. We're sort of inundated with all of the Big Brother nonsense that's happening. And then, you know, we're having a great time doing the Survivor series. So I pivoted back, watched this episode. I was like, all right, you know, Liana, you got to watch the Survivor episode, a little bit begrudgingly. As soon as I turned it on and saw the previously on, I was like, oh yeah, baby. Like, this is why I love Survivor. This is why I love this season, because this episode is just such an incredibly outstandingly fun episode, because you have this narrative of JT giving the idol away, Russell sort of setting up this whole facade with the Women's Alliance controlling the Villains Tribe. And this is really the payoff of that story arc. And with then Parr playing the two idols, which Russell, of course, doesn't appreciate, then sort of sets up narratives that continue throughout the season. So it really is sort of this linchpin when it comes to the season of Heroes Villains, because I feel like it's at the epicenter of a number of really entertaining storylines.
Yeah, Russell says in this tribal council that this is the most important tribal council that he's ever been to. And the weird thing is, it might not be hyperbolic due to the lack of a swap in this season. And it being 5 versus 5, this really did feel like a very important move. And look, it's not going to be a straight hero pagongin, considering that Russell's going to change his mind once more and get rid of Danielle. But this set up things, you know, this essentially screwed 4 other people besides JT out of possibly winning. I talked about this on Australian Survivor a lot, that some of my favorite Survivor episodes in terms of storytelling are those where a heist movie essentially ensues, where at the top of an episode, someone says, this is what I want to do this episode, and I'm going to try to make it happen. And so they spend the entire episode bringing people together, maybe working against some obstacles that come in their way, and then ultimately get away with a Survivor prestige. To go back to Australian Survivor, the Henry boot in season 2 is a big example. The Mad Rogers boot in season 3. Just these episodes that are not necessarily big on drama in terms of, oh, who's going to go home, and more so big on drama of, can this person pull this move off? And this is another episode that I felt sort of was in the same world, which makes it a very different episode. The episode opens with, as the villains get, you know, the note saying it's time to merge, they sit down, sans Sandra, and say, okay, here's what you're going to do. And they carry through that plan, and it pays off pretty seamlessly. Now, that being said, it's not without some rocks in the road, perhaps, in the form of Sandra trying to essentially rat out the villains to Rupert. But that has some complications as well. But it's so much fun to watch this episode, even knowing what's going to happen, because the journey to get there is surprisingly fraught with twists and turns.
I think it even kind of makes, well, I, you know, obviously I can't go back and remember me watching this for the very first time and sort of compare my feelings watching it the first time to watching it now, knowing what's going to happen. But I think almost being omniscient and omniscient. Oh, baby, merge the words together, just like Survivor Merge.
Hillens.
Your host villains, our Hillens, yes, our, oh, I was our willins. It's almost great because you can kind of put yourself in everybody's perspective and think, okay, so Sandra knows the truth, right? And so she's trying to expose the truth to Rupert without stepping on too many toes, giving herself away, because she still obviously is nervous because the villains do sort of have this hidden, you know, the hidden immunity idol in their back pocket. They stole from JT. There's just so many interesting dynamics going on. And almost these, all of these different parties that are sort of all trying to play each other. And it just makes for a very interesting episode and a very interesting tribal council.
Yeah. And even if you're looking at a microcosm of Sandra's second winning game in Heroes versus Villains, this is actually a great episode to watch because her journey in this post-merge is really trying to work with those heroes and be like, Russell is dangerous. You don't know what you're in for. I've experienced it firsthand. We need to get rid of him. Things failing to conceptualize. And Sandra, as she says in this episode, she's stuck with Russell, and sticking with him ended up being something that for one reason or another got her to the final three. But at that point, because she was so vocal about we need to get rid of this guy, Rupert's going to say the final tribal council, like, we should have listened to you. I can't believe it. And this is really one of the first episodes where she's like Cassandra and not the Survivor Fiji player, but the person from Greek mythology in that perspective, where she is warning them, listen, you can't do this. I'll flip over with you guys and we'll make something happen. And they don't listen to her and they pay the price as a result. But they, and that, as a result, they look back on what Sandra was going to do for them. And as a result, the heroes resoundingly vote for Sandra in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that Sandra was definitely set up because of the particular circumstance, right? Like, she does happen to be the one that survives from the villains. But to her credit, she really is trying to make the most of it in this situation. And she's trying to walk that fine line between getting the heroes to be like, wake up, y'all. He is not to be trusted. And Rupert, a little bit, at least in his confessionals, is like, oh, he's too timing. I don't know if I trust him. But of course, that doesn't materialize in anything, at least for the heroes. But it certainly materializes in something for Sandra at the end when, like you say, all of the heroes sort of wake up, are like, oh, you're right. We should have listened to you all along.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we talked about this a couple of episodes ago, how some episodes tend to include, you know, everyone sort of having an opinion. Some really focus on a few people. I would say this is somewhere in between, where obviously the focus is on Rupert and Sandra and Russell and Parvati, so that people like Jerry and Colby and Candace are sort of pushed to the back. But another key cog in this episode that some people might not realize, and I think one of the big people behind the double idol play, is the one and only Amanda Kimmel, who we just talked about last week as well in Survivor Micronesia, where we see her and Parvati in you know, I guess it's really cool that we have these episodes back to back, because to watch Parvati and Amanda come together in Micronesia versus heroes versus villains is a tale of two cities, where here Amanda is trying to use her relationship with Parvati to help the heroes, thinks she's getting away with it, but Parvati sees through it like it is the thinnest slice of Swiss cheese ever.
Well, this was beautiful watching Amanda get so embarrassingly outplayed by Parv. It's just sort of incredible. Between the conversation that they have in the jungle, where Parv originally says like, oh yeah, I have the immunity idol, which sort of starts off this whole chain of events, which yes, then
her response is loving it.
Oh, loving it, which I think I need to include in my lexicon. Oh, Mike, loving it, but with that tone, which is clearly like...
Yeah, like, oh, great, good for you, like that false enthusiasm.
Oh, you're doing Puya, you're doing another stream. Great. Loving it. To then their conversation on the beach when Amanda's trying to get Parv to play her idol. And Parv's like, yeah, so you think it's me? And then Amanda's like, you better play that thing. You better play it tonight for you. And then plays dumb.
She goes, I don't know what to do, Parvati. I'm so confused. My head hurts.
This is all so confusing.
I have amnesia. Who are you?
I'm sorry. Wait, an idol what? It's just, oh, poor Amanda. Oh, but still a thing of beauty.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's not like Amanda is incapable of lying, right? She was one of the people to help get rid of James in China. She had one of arguably her best moves ever in the final six of Survivor Micronesia, where she lies about, though I guess she claims when she played that idol, right, like, well, I didn't lie because I didn't have it then, but she still is able to pull the wool over so many people's eyes in playing that idol and saving herself. I don't know what it is here. Maybe it's because it's Parvati, who she's like went part and parcel with the entire season. Maybe she was just caught flat-footed in that moment. But yeah, that moment, she was definitely not loving it.
I have to believe that this is a byproduct of the fact that they played together so closely in Micronesia, because this is why I can't play those social strategy games with Puya, like, on opposite sides, because we both just are so suspicious of one another, whether or not it's warranted or not, just because you know that person. And so you just have a better sense of them. And so when someone's lying to you, you are kind of have this heightened sense of nervousness about it, and you can kind of get a sense of what's going on. So I think that's definitely part of it, because like you said, Amanda is capable of doing that. She has been able to do it in the past. I think it's just the combination of these two players, and especially Parv being so sort of calm, cool, and collected when she's just looking at Amanda, just sort of looking for those tells. Looking for it, because of course Parv and Amanda know they're coming into a 5-5 situation. Like, unless they come to each other and be like, oh my gosh, I am so excited, that enthusiasm is just not there when they talk to one another, so they're going to be suspicious.
So now I, of course, my mind was percolating, which one of you between you and Puya is the Amanda and which is the Parvati?
Well, I think
Puyity and Leon Amanda.
I do. My body type is much more like Amanda. Like, I'm tall, I've got long sort of brown hair. So that could be the case. But I am more into yoga. So like, I would be out on the island of Edge of Extinction doing yoga, where I don't think that Puyity, is that what we, yeah, that what we call? Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be doing that.
But would you also take bananas without asking?
Ooh. Oh my gosh. I totally forgot that the start of that tribal council is going on back to Banana Wars and Rupert being like, it's the ripe bananas.
I have said it again and again. I love Rupert as a Survivor character because he's so damn serious. And he also has such like a weird way, to your point, of delivering things. Like, I think he says here, like, we have green bananas all the time and we watch them ripen.
Yes. The way that he phrases things is just so fascinating. And that man is a quote machine. I mean, we'll get into it with one of the games that I've prepared today, but there were so many good quotes. And Rupert is one of those characters that can generate a classic quote.
Especially when he's like miserable. Like, unfortunately, I do feel like excitable Rupert is less quotable than like down in the dumps Rupert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Because even when, I don't know, it's when Rupert is put into some sort of troubling situation, regardless of what it is. Like, when he's talking about Russell in this episode, like, he says, like, see if I can oust Russell for the weasel that he is. Yeah. Ugh, great quote.
But yeah, even that beforehand, like, one of his quotes from his boot episode in Pearl Islands was, like, so much rot and death as he's chopping that coconut. In All Stars, when he's talking about the adventure of building the log cabin, he's like, and then we went down. He didn't like down.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, Rupert.
We'll have plenty to say about Rupert and all the other 9 members of Yin Yang as we get into some games here.
Oh, sorry, the Yin Yang thing. That was another. Oh, there's so many good moments in this episode when they're at the immunity challenge. And you know how usually when they merge and they come up with a new tribe name, they explain it to Jeff. Oh, what does this mean? Yeah. Russell explaining Yin Yang to Jeff, and Jeff just being like, yeah, whatever, bro.
Well, didn't he say, like, it means good and evil?
Yeah.
And that's not what it means at all.
Thanks, Russell. And who let Russell explain Yin Yang?
Yeah, well, they didn't know anything about Russell. So maybe if they knew what a weasel he is, they wouldn't have let the weasel talk to Jeff about it.
Very true.
But it's also interesting to have that compared to, again, last week's merge episode from Micronesia, where it was Eric pulling the deep fake and convincing everyone that Dabu meant something in Micronesia. He was so closely on it to calling it faux shizzle.
Yeah, faux shizzle, Momo. I don't care what we call it. Momo.
And they might have been close to calling him Momo here. I don't know where Jerry was coming from with the all villains comment, but it's a great Colby moment of, really, Jerry? Really? All villains?
Yes, there. I needed more of that in the episode.
I mean, listen, we need more of that in the season, because that's one of, you know, we've talked about this, that Sarah and Tony and Colby and Jerry are really one of the big long term relationships in Survivor history. And it was a sad to only see like a few spurts of it here and there. But that's one of the few exchanges we got.
Right, which, you know, obviously they're on separate tribes to start the game, but they do spend a decent amount of the merge together, at least, what, like 5 episodes, six episodes?
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Should have been more of that.
There's a story about how apparently one night in the post-merge, they like had a night conversation and like finally made up after years of going to war with each other. I've sort of come around, and I think people at the time were like, my God, why did you not show that? And instead showed all this Russell stuff. But I think, in retrospect, when it comes to less so about like acknowledging long-term storylines and more so about focusing on the action at hand, that had no bearing whatsoever on the season, considering that, you know, Jerry was part of the alliance that voted Colby out in the end. So it unfortunately had no consequence on what happened with the vote. And so unfortunately it had to hit the cutting room floor, even if those of us old school fans who got to watch Survivor the Australian Outback and the torrid relationship they had would have liked having some closure personally.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a battle between showing the storylines that are most relevant for this season as a whole versus the entire 3 season and, you know, 15 year arc or whatever of their relationship. 2 different things. So, yeah, I think that is unfortunate, but I understand why the editors would make that choice.
All right. So we have a game here from K-Tom dealing with Survivor heroes versus villains. So they write in and say, I have a list of character archetypes that I need to fill for the next season of Survivor. Can you help me out by recommending people that I can cast in each of these roles? So here's how this is going to work, Liana. And I'm going to play this alongside you. I have blocked out the answers, so I am in the dark as much as you are. But what's going to happen is I will read out a clue or an archetype. The answer is going to be the name of a cast member from Survivor Heroes versus Villains, but the last name is going to have one of the letters changed in it to mean something different. So, for example, if the clue is someone who will be excited to go to Exile Island with its unlimited fruit shack, but once there will spend her time cleaning all the surfaces with a rag, the answer is Sugar Wiper. So that's Sugar Kuiper, but you change the K to a W and it becomes Sugar Wiper.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, well, I think, okay, Sugar Shack, sugar. And I was like, why is she, was she known for cleaning stuff? Is this an episode of Gabon that I just don't remember?
Yeah,
at
don't
all?
You remember when Sugar becomes the maid?
Ah, yes, the neurotically cleaning episode, of course. How could one forget?
Yeah, Sugar, you know, dealing with OCD out there. I'm happy she was able to make it as far as she did, though that Sugar Shack was spectacular by the end, perfectly immaculate with just how many times she visited it and just spot cleaned the heck out of it.
I mean, get her a toothbrush. That girl's going for it.
All right. So again, I'm going to read a clue. We're going to figure out together here who the Heroes versus Villains contestant is if we change one letter of their last name to mean something completely different.
Okay, so, of their last name. One letter of their last name.
I believe so. I didn't want to look too much to spoil right. myself, so maybe we'll of be course. Wrong here. But here's the first one.
Poof.
Someone who will increase her tribe's odds of surviving tribal council by playing little green men on as many small onions as she can.
What? What?
Okay, someone who will increase her tribe's odds of surviving tribal council by playing little green men on as many small onions as she can. I feel like this is Parvati. Because remember, Parvati in the episode talks about, like, the little green men protecting her, because those are what the idols are.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes, of course. And, okay. And then something about onions. Oh, little shallot. Parvati shallot.
Parvati shallot. Yes. All right, let's look. Let's look here. Answer number one is Parvati shallot.
Oh, boom, baby.
I love it. Love it. Okay.
Oh, my God. All right.
Also, apparently there's a meta puzzle here. If you get all the answers, there's a meta puzzle. Find a way to combine the answers together to reveal who will be the star of this season. As a hint, he is one part Survivor Samoa contestant, one part Millennials versus Gen X contestant, and one part Big Brother 20 contestant.
Wait, what do we combine? The last names?
I think the letter that we got changed. So write that down. We have a T.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. So it's a W to T.
So
does that matter?
T, I think.
Okay. So we'll go with T. Okay. T.
All right. Next one. A top-tier eye roller who will cut down the frickin' lunatic she's playing the game with, and most importantly, assign scores to their ridiculousness, whether they are walking around like bandy-legged trolls or wearing feathers in their hair.
Well, is it Courtney?
Courtney, so it's Courtney Yates. Could it be Courtney Rates? Like she's rating them?
Okay, yeah, sure, let's go with that.
All right, let's see. It is indeed Courtney Rates.
All right, TR. That's what we got.
TR, okay. Here's number three. Someone who used to vanquish fire-breathing lizards, but has since gained so much weight, he has to go through doors sideways.
Ooh, okay, well, that's Coach, right? Mm-hmm. So...
Ooh, is it Coach Wide?
Oh, that's so good. Yes. Coach Wide.
Coach Wide. Let's see. The correct answer is Coach Wide.
Yes. Okay,
oh, I
so
love that.
I...
That could be like, I feel like maybe that's an insult left on the cutting room floor from Stacey Powell in Survivor South Pacific being like, we don't want to deal with Benjamin. He's Coach Wide now.
Classic burn.
All right. Next up, an unlikable villain whose leg coverings will become so smelly they will have to be burned in the fire by the end of the season.
Russell Hants. Is it Russell...
Pants?
Pants?
Yeah, like, I'm thinking leg coverings. I guess pants do cover your legs. I just don't think of them as that.
And is it okay that it has a Z at the end? Pants?
I think so. I think maybe we're going for an edgier spelling.
You say like pants.
Yeah, it is indeed. Let's see. Russell Pants. Yes, with a P.
Oh, all right. Well, so far we have Trip.
All right. Trip.
What we've spelled.
Had Russell become more of a thing, but he really was a thing by the end of Heroes versus Villains. Why did he come out with a line of fashion called Russell Pants?
Russell Pants.
Or like for prospective Survivor players, like you can fit so many idols in these Russell Pants.
Mmm. Yes. Okay. I didn't even think about that. Like something that's more targeted. Think about all the pockets. That could be something he really definitely should have gone with, not being sarcastic here.
Yeah, you could put like stories about your fake stories about the people you lost in Hurricane Katrina in there. You could fit so much.
you could fill your millions, you know, like just yeah, shove the all the dollar that you bills
yeah,
in
all
there.
All the oil money you have.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep, yep.
If you're renovating houses with your brother on another reality show, you could easily put tools in there. Who needs a toolbox when you have Russell Pants?
Like just, you know, pocket nails.
Yeah. Y'all, I need nails.
I got me nails.
I wonder if maybe I would not be surprised if Russell plays on a future season and he brings pocket nails to the island, like pocket sand.
That's next level strategy.
All right, here's the next one. A confident queen who, if given the opportunity to use a rotary phone on the island, would call a thin coil of rope. Thin coil of rope.
A thin coil of rope.
Ooh, I know what it is.
Okay, lay it on me.
Is it Sandra Dial Twine?
Yes, I didn't think about that. Her last name is hyphenated.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, thin coil of rope. At first, I was thinking like wire because it was connected to the phone, literally. But no, right. So like, Twine is the one that is unchanged, and Diaz changed to Dial because of the rotary phone.
Okay, let's see. Is that the right answer?
It is Sandra Dial Twine.
Oh, baby. And that's where the phone comes from. Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. Okay, cool.
Wow. That's another thing. If she had her own hotline, Dial Twine.
Could you? Oh, my gosh. Sorry, I'm just picturing like a Miss Cleo type situation, but for Sandra, just predictions, but it's all in, of course, like the Sandra style of delivery. So very straight, very to the point, very direct.
Well, that's the thing.
Your future.
I believe Sandra offered her advice to the heroes on the Sandra Dial Twine hotline, and they did not want to accept the charges.
I mean, I was gonna say she did it for free and they just ignored it, but man, maybe next time they can get a calling card and really take advantage of the Sandra Dial Twine line.
Was that sort of like Island of the Idols? Was like they had access to the Sandra Dial Twine because they just went there? I guess they didn't call her, but they just more so just visited her.
Yeah, they visited, but I think it's the same thing. The Boston Rob. I'm trying to think of how to make Mariano into like a phone pun. And I'm really blanking.
Boston Rob. Something with a phone.
Okay.
Boston Rob phone? Marion Dial Tone.
Marion Dial Tone. Oh, disaster.
Disaster. All right, let's move on to number six here. Someone who likes to eat bats and discuss types of atoms, both on tables.
Both on tables?
Could it be James Elements?
Oh, yes, because periodic table.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Different types of atoms. I was thinking about, like, I don't know, electrons and protons. But yeah, periodic table. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I like that answer.
Number six is James Element.
Yeah, okay, sweet.
As in, James was not in his James element in Heroes versus Villains because he was not portrayed very well.
No, absolutely not.
Number seven, a good old boy who sends his idols with love letters addressed to the protective enclosures from Survivor Africa.
Oh, shoot, what were those called?
I think they were called BOMAs.
BOMAS?
BOMAS, B-O-M-A-S.
Yeah, but isn't it JT Thomas?
Yeah, Thomas.
Thomas. So is it Bomas?
Bomas. Bahomas.
Bahomas.
Oh, I loved her on Big Brother.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite players.
Bahomas. I guess it's got to be that, I suppose. Because,
yeah, the enclosures from Survivor Africa.
All right. So we're going to go with B. JT Bahomas. Though I guess I always thought the T stood for Thomas, so maybe it would be JB instead.
Oh, Homus. Is that his last name? So Bomas?
All right, let's see. It is JT Bomas, yes.
Oh, so wait, is the T, is it, how's it spelled?
I guess B-O-M-A-S, so I'm not sure, maybe the last name is not spelled properly, but that's totally fine. We're gonna get away with it to have JT reference Survivor Africa, incidentally.
I mean, okay, look, he already used up the T in his name for JT. We're not going to give him another T, all right?
Well,
a finite
you
number.
Used up your T.
I'm sorry, I've already used it up in your nickname. There's a finite number that you can have.
Yeah, and babe, when you're creating names, I don't know, on Ellis Island or something, it's like, well, you already used up the T and the O, so we're going to have to throw the rest of the letters in there.
Like, what is this Wheel of Fortune? Oh, oh, sorry.
Not enough already... money. You can't buy too many vowels for your last name.
Exactly.
All right. Number 8, a cantankerous gentleman who will hang up on you if you try to discuss grains used to make beer. Perhaps he'll hang up you on the, he'll give you a Sandra Dial dialed tone twine.
Yeast, right? Would be, so is it Tom Westman? Is that the Yeastman?
But I feel like he's not a cantankerous gentleman, Tom Yeastman.
I'm sorry.
Because I feel like that's Randy Bailey.
Ooh. Oh, Randy Bailey. Oh, shoot.
Randy Barley.
Yes, Barley. Yes. I was like,
Randy
that word?
Barley sounds like a beer mascot. And now I kind of
really
want it to
does.
Be a thing.
I would drink the Randy Barley beer. Randy Barley beer. RBB. Wow.
Good enough for a fake idol. Is the fake idol like the symbol on the beer bottle?
Yeah, I mean, that has to be one of the beers. I'm assuming we're starting as a microbrewery, of
exactly.
course. Super
whenever,
hip.
Whenever you, life's got you down and you just want to say, forget you, go home, goodbye, drink some Randy Barley.
Drink some Randy. Have a big old glass of Randy Barley beer.
And that's correct. It is Randy Barley. Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on.
Okay, so we have Trip Leber.
Okay,
E-B-R.
I feel like this is going to be like a jumble where we have to rearrange the letters.
That makes way more sense.
Instead of Trip Leber.
I'm sorry enough. I'm still getting over Tom Yeastman. I can't believe I said that. That's so dumb.
And now I'm imagining, like, if people get so bored in quarantine that obviously they've been baking bread, if people can bake bread to look like Survivor contestants, you can make, like, Tom Yeastman. I'm not sure who else off the top of my head.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that would be hilarious. I think
like Sandra Diaz Rye.
Yeah, right. I was trying to make a pumpernickel reference, but that there's I can't
oh,
think of it.
Ken McPumpernickel.
Ken McPumpernickel. Oh my gosh, Colby Sourdough, but that's just because of his attitude in this season.
Sour Donaldson.
Sour Donaldson. No, that's like in Parks and Recreation when Adam Scott's character...
Yeah, the low-cal calzone zone.
Well, it's when he's depressed and he makes the stop action video and he's like, mm-hmm. Would a depressed person make this? I'm just imagining me with my bread people being like, would a depressed person make...
Yeah, my bread Survivor contestants.
This is my. We're doing a bread steal. We're modeling the season.
And then what'd you do? Like, I don't know. The oven has spoken, and you like put the towel over them.
Wait, is this? Are they pre-baked or post-baked?
I don't know. I guess
just get eaten.
One has to be chosen as like the supreme bread, the slice Survivor.
Yeah, who's like the Jeff Probst in this situation?
I guess it would have to be like some sort of baker or something, right?
Ooh, yes. What's the most famous baker you can think of? You're like a Top Chef person. Is there a famous baker that we could model Jeff Probst after?
I mean, I guess I'm going to like my baking reality shows. The first person I would think of would be someone like Mary Berry or Paul Hollywood.
Yeah, Jeff Berry. Sorry, new. I don't even know.
All right, let's move on here. A woman who feeds marijuana to roosters to get them to profess their instant love for her, but who has no problem flipping on them later.
Sorry, all I'm thinking of is Shambo and her dream, and I don't know why, because it's like a hallucination.
Yeah, with the roosters.
It's like, all right, doesn't even make any sense.
I think this is Candace Weedcock.
Yes, it has to be. It has to be.
Which sounds like I didn't know how you can make Candace's maiden name worse until you turned it from Woodcock into Weedcock.
Weedcock. Is that now, so that's two E's. Does that count as one E in our scramble?
I think it counts as one E, because we're replacing one letter. Technically, it's just used twice. Maybe she had some extra money on Ellis Island to buy another vowel.
Okay, gotcha. This is a one E, one egg scramble. Gotcha.
Yep, so it is indeed E, Candace Weedcock.
Okay, Candace Weedcock
sounds like something like a 13-year-old would make up as their, when they're like doing improv for the first time, of like, yeah, I can't believe I'm in this graveyard, Candace Weedcock.
Sorry, is the weed based on marijuana or based on the fact that they're in a, there's lots of weeds on the ground?
No, a woman who feeds marijuana to roosters, I guess, is talking about that. But yeah, I think the kid would be like, you know, I'm going to throw a bunch of dirty words in there because I'm doing improv for the first time.
Yeah. Or Liana as an adult also doing improv.
Exactly. When in doubt, just call your character Weedcock.
I don't know. I'm still into the whole bread thing, but yes.
All right. Well, actually, speaking of bread, I think our Tom Yeastman might make a comeback here for our last one. Someone who administers firefighting exams to potential new firefighters.
Okay, so that's obviously Tom Yeastman. Someone who administers exams is the other clue.
Yeah, is it? Maybe it's Tom Testman, like Tom Testman.
Testman. Is there a name for?
There's a proctor.
Proctor. Oh, yes. That's what I was thinking of. But I think that's more than one letter. So I think Testman has to be the answer.
That sounds like a superhero name. Also, the most boring superhero in the world.
Yes. What would be a superhero that he administers tests?
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, stop right there, bank robber. Answer these questions.
Oh, ho, ho, trying to get your driver's license without taking the exam, I see.
So it's only those situations?
Those are the only two situations.
So yes, Tom Testman is the correct answer.
Yay! Okay, so wait, was that the last one?
So that's the last one. So we have TRIP.
So we have TRIP, or at least this is what I wrote down amidst all the funness. So LEBRET are the other letters that I have. So what was the clue? It's a Big Brother contestant also?
He's one part Survivor Samoa contestant, one part Millennials versus Gen X contestant, and one part Big Brother 20 contestant. So I guess this is a name.
Okay, well, you can spell Brett, which makes sense for
both Samoa and Big Brother 20.
Right. So if you spell, let's see, let me get rid of these letters. Then you have IPLER that are left.
IPLER.
Which also sounds like a beer, like an IPLER. IPA, but also like a Pilsner, PLER. I don't know.
All right. I'm trying to think about a Millennials versus Gen X contestant besides Ken McPumpernickel.
Ken McPumpernickel.
But I guess we have to think of last names of these contestants.
I mean, that's also assuming that Brett is the first name, which I do feel. Wait, do you think it's Brett?
Brett
with
is,
one
but
T?
There's also a Brett on Survivor Millennials versus Gen X as well.
Oh, shoot. Oh, no. So then do you think it's OK? Wait. Brett. So Brett from Samoa was one T or two T's?
Two T's. And Brett from Millennials versus Gen X was one T.
One T. And then Brett from Big Brother 20 was two T's, I think.
So I think Brett is taken care of. Now we just need to feel like what we need to do with IPLER.
I think the only question is whether or not there's an extra there's a T in there, because you could shift the T from Brett over to IPLER.
And then what would you do with that?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Mike, because I definitely know what that would be. This is why people don't podcast them playing like Sudoku or.
Yeah. Oh, darn. That was going to be the next thing I do in the Big Brother off season.
These are my off-season podcasts. Is me playing Sudoku. So check out my Twitch stream of me playing Sudoku. That actually might work. Okay, so let's see.
Tell that to Puyati.
Puyati, yes. Lipter.
Brett Lipter.
Brett Lipter. All right. Well, what do you want to do?
Let's guess Brett Lipter and see what it is.
Brett Lipter, baby.
All right. Let's see. Oh.
Oh, no.
The correct answer was triple Brett.
Oh, dude. Oh. What? Oh, come on. We were literally there.
Why did we not come up with the acronym?
Oh,
or the anagram?
What was I even thinking? Like, it was going to be just like a made up. Oh, my God. We're so.
Oh, and you know what? We're so stupid dumb. Because if you go in order, like you said, oh, trip Leber. No, if you go triple Brett, the letters were in order. We are so stupid.
Yes.
We literally spelled it out.
I'm looking at it in order and it is literally triple Brett right in front of me, not scrambled. I just got stuck on trip being its own word for some reason. It's literally written on my paper, triple Brett.
Oh,
dude, we don't even deserve, like,
I don't know. We got all 10 answers correct. So, like, I think we failed at the extra credit, but Tom Tessman, I think, could give us pretty high marks.
I think so too. I think if we're gonna have a superhero come hang out with us, Tom Tessman would give us the stamp of approval.
Well, thank you so much to Kate Tom for sending that in. That was delightful and a great way to take a new look at some of these contestants and maybe other products that could have marketed back in 2010 when they hit the peak of their zeitgeist.
It's literally triple Brett. It literally says triple Brett.
This was perfect.
That was so fun. Oh my gosh. I really enjoyed that. And also I got my Brett Steele out of it. So I think all in all, just a fantastic
more off-season content coming in the interminable weeks to come.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit and bring up a question because I was thinking about this throughout the episode and then it continued to plague me throughout the couple days since I watched the episode. This is such a fantastic cast. And I think back and I think so fondly on heroes, villains, and all of the fun characters that we get to see. And then I was like, I literally just watched an all winner season. Like, why am I so happy and reminiscing about heroes, villains when I just got to see all winners play? So the discussion question, and maybe we're too close to Winners at War to really answer this now, but which cast is better, Winners at War or Heroes Villains? Because I think part of it is the nostalgia of Heroes Villains and putting together some of these people. But at the same time, all winners? Like, come on. You have people like Ethan, even though, you know, I guess we see him for the whole season. But even though he's not in the, like, official game very long, like Tyson, like all of these really fun people, I guess there's some crossover as well. But that to me is like a question that I've just been thinking about for a few days now.
Yeah, it's a really good question because, you know, this was probably the biggest season since Heroes versus Villains. And, you know, they're on both casts. Of course, with any All-Stars cast, as we've been talking about on the Big Brother side, they're, of course, going to be sort of question marks. You know, I think people are still questioning why people like Danielle and Candace were on and why certain people were on Winners at War as well. The difference for me comes down to storytelling, because like I said before, unlike Heroes versus Villains, which was more, I think, concentrated on like what was going on with the immediate season, Winners at War was so much more about like the larger thing of what Survivor means to these people. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Ethan's personal journey outside of the game. You had people like Sarah and Ben and Michelle coming to the island to say, like, I would like to win again, but I also want to accomplish this goal. I don't think we got that out of Heroes versus Villains. So it's a distinctly different feeling season to me. I will say, I had more fun, I think, with Heroes versus Villains, because I think that the cast overall was just like a very fun cast where production also like really kept its foot off the pedal, right? There were no swaps. There were only a few idols in the game, one at each camp, that got replaced when they got played. Whereas, obviously, Winners at War had fire tokens and Edge of Extinction and all these advantages being thrown in. And so, coming from someone who likes more of a pure, straightforward game, I'm going to have to give the slight edge to Heroes versus Villains. But from a storytelling perspective, Winners at War almost felt more fulfilling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. When you think about what season 40 Winners at War really means, when we look back, and this is why I'm thinking like, oh, maybe I'm too close to really answer this question fully, because season 40 is and will be so iconic. Right. The fact that Survivor is celebrating, you know, 20 years, they brought back all of these fantastic winners from across all eras of Survivor. I feel like, yes, a little bit of it is tainted because of the twists, because it's not as like pure maybe as we would want it to be. But still, like, it's just got such a it warms my heart. And we were talking about this when this before the season was happening of like, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this is happening. And there's sort of this just monumental emotion that's associated with it. And so from a like, it's just so grandiose. And I think that that season represents something. But if I'm talking about the cast, I agree with you. I think I do have to give a little bit of the edge to Heroes Villains, because the cast and the just like the connections and all of the intricate little bizarre storylines of everything that happens throughout the season to me is a little bit more entertaining. And so I think I want to give the edge to Winners at War because of what the season represents. But if I'm talking about cast, which was my question, I have to go with Heroes Villains.
Yeah, and I will still say that the final six of Heroes versus Villains, just like looking across the franchise, is probably the most iconic final six of all time. Say what you want to about their performance in the season, but between Rupert, Colby, Jerry, Russell, Parvati, and Sandra, those are like six of the most infamous names in Survivor history. And the fact that they made up the final six is absolutely bananas to me, whether green or yellow.
I know that there is some debate about, well, who's really on the Mount Rushmore, but I think what at least I've heard Rob talk about, what I've seen some articles written about, Parv and Sandra are both on that Mount Rushmore, and maybe Russell, depending on who you talk to. And so the fact that at least two of the four Mount Rushmore people are sitting there at the end, it is just I think adds to the whole iconicness of this cast. And I think because Winners at War is all winners, there almost is more variety in Heroes Villains because they were casting just characters. So you have people that maybe fall under that all winner category. You have people that are just so fun to watch because, you know, Courtney Yates is going to sit there and give you those amazing one-liners in confessionals, but she would never be considered. I mean, obviously she's not a winner, right? So she can't be in that type of season. And I think that that diversity also really helps when you're talking about character types. Not that Winners at War doesn't have that, but I think you get a little bit more of that because you're not just pulling from winners.
And not to mention that, you know, I think that to that point, you know, especially in the pre-merge, Heroes versus Villains was also very character oriented. You know, there's a reason why people say the Villains tribe is one of the greatest tribes in Survivor history, not only in performance with subsequent seasons, but also in terms of just entertainment, is because they were providing so much. Whereas Winners of War, maybe it's because it was all winners, they really wanted to focus on the game aspect of it, I think was remembered more so for the strategy and Tony's antics, and maybe less so about like the big moments of fun entertainment that were going on during the season. But that being said, you know, I think we're really just like picking at hairs here. That's not a phrase. But essentially, you know, these are two, in my opinion, top tier seasons. It's just an opinion of like, which one of the two legendary seasons is the slightly more legendary one?
Right. This is picking at crumbs, if you will. We're going to stick with our bread analogy. And yeah, and that's the thing is that's what I want to make clear is that both of these seasons are so fantastic. There's so many amazing people on both seasons. It really is just that. And that's why this question was in my head living rent free for so long, because I can't really still even now that we're talking about it. Yeah, okay, I'm saying heroes, villains now, but ask me tomorrow and I might say winners at war.
Yeah.
But you know, you and I are both people, I think, that do prefer more of the character type stories. And so I think that's why maybe both of us are leaning towards heroes, villains. But, you know, you ask somebody else and winners at war, or ask me again, like I said, tomorrow, and winners at war may be the answer. I think it's just, it's really neat now to be able to look back, because we're not in the midst of a season. We are doing this rewatch. We are able to think back to the previous seasons of Survivor and now start to put them in the context of some of the seasons that have aired more recently, because you kind of need to have a little bit of that distance, albeit this is only, you know, 3 or 4 months out. But still, I think that that allows you to then take a look back and really evaluate these seasons as a whole.
Yeah. And I think, you know, not to mention that I do feel like the anticipation for the season is a little different, because I think All Winners was a theme that had been resounding in Survivor as a possibility all the way back, even before Heroes versus Villains. Whereas Heroes versus Villains, I don't think people were necessarily thinking like, let's get 10 heroes and 10 villains and put them together. And, you know, obviously, I think it's easier to quibble with the casting of Heroes versus Villains than All Winners, because All Winners, you're like, well, they all won. So it's not like we can't say like, you know, put this runner up on. Whereas Heroes versus Villains, it was more so about like, okay, is this person really a top 10 hero in Survivor history? Is this person really a top 10 villain in Survivor history? And of course, the casting was subjective up to the last minute as to who was sorted into who. But it was still like, I think they nailed some of the bigger names to have, you know, Tom and Colby against people like Russell and Coach. You know, I feel like there are some of the biggest people that you think of ended up being on this season in those respective categories, and everyone just sort of filled in the rest of the spectrum.
Well, I mean, Jerry would say we're all villains. Really, Jerry?
Really, Jerry?
That's so good. Loving it. Well, speaking of an iconic cast, one thing that really stood out to me when watching this episode and a lot of these iconic episodes is just the number of quotes fantastic quotes. We talked about this from Rupert talking about the bananas to Sandra's, you know, I hope I get my revenge. It's going to be good.
Yeah,
which now,
you know how they say, forgive and forget. Well, I don't forgive and I don't forget.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. I really want to put that on a throw pillow, because it's just, especially to guests that come in my home, it's like a not so subtle reminder of like, don't you dare F around.
Don't cross me.
I don't forget.
Don't
I
F
don't
with
forget.
Leona Boris.
That's right. All the way to JT's final words, where he's like, don't ever trust women ever.
Yeah, he was like, he turned into this thing of like, don't trust villains, but more importantly, don't trust women, like trying to make this a life lesson. Like this is an Aesop's fable.
I don't remember that particular Aesop's fable. It was like, don't trust women. But yes, it was just such a weird fight. Like, I did not remember that at all. So that was really fun to see for maybe stupid reasons. But anyway, so what I did was I went back and I have pulled some various quotes from some of these iconic characters. So I'm going to read you. So not necessarily from this episode and not even necessarily from this season. But the thing is that I've only pulled quotes from the people who were in this particular episode. So JT, Amanda, Candace, Danielle, Rupert, Colby, Jerry, Russell, Parv, and Sandra. Okay, so those are going to be your potential answers.
Well, I can cross Candace off because I don't believe she talks in this episode.
That's right. Well, it's not just from this episode.
Oh,
this is
okay.
Because I just like Mike just watched the episode. I got to make things a little bit harder for him. Although some of these are maybe a little bit more obvious than others.
My name is Sandra.
And I don't trust Russell. So I have these quotes here. Let's see how you do. Your very first quote is I can't do the names or the accents. Not that I can do them anyway. That actually might confuse you more than help you.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's more of a smokescreen.
Exactly. Because I'm bad at that. But I'm just going to read the quote. The great, powerful Rupert, the good guy, the second coming of Christ. You're such a dumbass, Rupert.
I mean, the word dumbass seems to tell me, oh, it's tough, because I feel like Sandra would say dumbass, but I know that Russell, I mean, he's famous in Survivor Samoa for talking about the dumbass girl alliance, unfortunately, so I'm going to have to go with Russell here.
That is correct. Yes, of course. That was a great, great Russell quote. And, you know, his hatred of Rupert is like, there were some more obvious ones, but just like persists throughout this whole season.
But it's interesting because, you know, I don't think Russell's exactly wrong. I think if you talk to people who played with Rupert, a lot of them do say that, especially back in those days, he had a bit of like a Jesus complex going on.
Well, and we talk about this more in actually a lot in RuPaul's Drag Race and a little bit in Big Brother, but sort of the in returning player seasons, if you know someone is a fan favorite, you don't necessarily want to say anything bad about that person because you don't want all of their stans to come after you. But Russell was just like, I don't give an F. I'm going to say however I feel.
But it's a little bit of energy from like Boston Rob and All Stars, right? Because Boston had that confessional about, you know, about how he was so excited to beat like Colby and Ethan. Being like, ah, he's just a pretty boy. Like, I don't understand, you know, why so many people love him. And so I do think there is, again, that villainous energy about kind of shitting on fan favorites and really dressing them down and showing why you're better than them and why people should support you instead of them. Ironically enough, the top two in the fan favorite voting for this season are going to be Russell and Rupert.
BVE, big villain energy.
Exactly.
All right. Our next quote is, I don't want my big mouth to get me in trouble.
Ooh, I feel like that is a Sandra quote. I want to say she said that from this episode, actually.
Yes, that is correct. I was trying to find a Sandra quote that was good, but still not obvious because Sandra is so just quotable and iconic. So that was very difficult. But yes, that is correct. Sandra did say that, and I do believe it was this episode.
Yeah, because I think it was after she found out that Rupert had, like, tattled on her.
Yeah.
She was worried that it was going to come back to Russell. So she essentially cut bait at that point and was like, oh, I'm just going to work with the villains. I'm stuck with Russell.
Right. I tried to talk to her. She's like, I think I tried to talk to Rupert for a couple minutes, like, very quickly. But, you know, that might disrupt her place in the game. So, yes, that was Sandra. Our next quote is, Tremail was very different today. It was so exciting. We opened up the Sprint Palm Prix to find out what's going on with today's challenge. There were like a million applications.
Ooh, okay. So the Sprint Palm Prix, I'm trying to remember which challenge that was from. I want to say it's the Family Challenge, but I think that was in Survivor Token Sheens that they did that. I'm going to say, so who was touting so many applications? You know what? Colby became such like a nice corporate shill during his various stints in Hollywood after Survivor the Australian Outback. I'm going to say it's him.
I'm sorry. That is incorrect. So this is actually, okay, so I don't know if I made this clear. It's not just this season. So I have pulled quotes from other seasons as well.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. But you've gotten two correct, okay, Mike? So, like, let's calm down.
Yeah, thank you for bringing me down, Leon. It really making me remember I'm not the second coming of Jesus in this game.
I mean, you know, you'll float away if I don't keep you grounded. No, this was actually from Cook Islands. This was Parv. She's, like, talking. There were, like, a million applications. Like, what? But that was just from the great days of all of the sponsorships. You know, not that we don't get some food sponsorships here and there, but, of course, missing the Sprint Palm Prix days.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that back during the day, the selling point of the phone would be how many applications it is, whereas today I think people are like, there are too many applications on this phone.
Right, gotta delete.
You didn't know how good we had it back in 2006 or whatever it was.
Oh, what a great time. Your next quote is, I shared, I cared, and I actually had fun.
Shared, I cared, and I actually had fun. I feel like, see, Rupert, it sounds like Rupert would be someone who says that he cared, actually had fun. I'm going to say Jerry said that because Jerry did not have a great time in her first couple seasons. So I feel like Jerry would say that about one of the, you know, the one of the seasons she actually participated in and had a relatively good time on.
So you should have stuck with your gut. It was Rupert.
Really?
Yeah. Who said this? I watched a ton of like best of videos to like pull these quotes, and I can't remember exactly which one it was from. But
maybe it was from Blood versus Water when he literally shared with Laura Bonham by letting her back into the game by sacrificing himself.
That is entirely possible. It's hard because he wears tie dye in every single season, so I can't place him based on his outfits, which I could with some of the others. But yes, that was a Rupert quote.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess that's a big departure on from so much for my dreams.
So much. I mean, he shared, he cared, he actually had fun. If I want to have more of a, I don't know, fun feeling throw pillow situation, maybe that's the quote that I
Yeah, I think
pick.
You should have two pillows. One says I shared, I cared, I actually had fun. And one is, you know, when they say forgive and forget, well, I don't forgive and I don't forget.
I need ones on each side.
Ooh,
or,
yeah.
Ooh, you know the pillows that were really in vogue a while ago, but where you have the sequins and then you push them over and then they're
it
the other color.
Different.
Yeah, exactly. So you like go whichever how I'm feeling, I just stroke that pillow and
ooh.
Change the clothes.
Stroke that pillow.
Oh, it sounds so dirty. All right. Next quote. I don't know how to quit. It's just not in me. I never quit anything in my life.
Ooh. I feel like that feel. Ooh. That feels like I'm between Colby and Russell, because that feels like a very Southern Texan mentality. But I can't remember if Russell like said that when he was down and out, maybe in Samoa, or if Colby said that in one of those moments when he was like downtrodden during that like really epic confessional he has in the final five in Heroes versus Villains. I'm buying more into the white hat side of things than the fedora. I'm going to say Colby.
That is correct. Yes, that was a Colby quote. It was when he was down in the dumps and he was like, I don't know how to quit. And you're like, OK, buddy, that's
yeah,
fine.
Well, that I think that's from like that one of the actually underrated one of the best confessionals ever where Colby, you know, his plan is like after he loses the immunity challenge at the final five, he goes to everyone. He's like, good game, everybody. You know, I'm happy to go here. And he has this confessional where he like talks through it and then he takes a long pause and he goes, damn near fooled myself. And like he starts to like gain energy back and like this is my plan now. So it's a really good Colby confessional for somebody who played a weird under the radar presence in the season overall.
All right. Your next quote is, I get wood. I get the water. I help you guys get snails. What are you even talking about?
Ooh, okay. I'm trying to think about a season that has snails in it. I feel like this would be Sandra's response to being accused of not doing work at camp. Because I feel like I don't know how many other people would like. I don't think anyone else is being really accused of being a do-nothing. So I'm going to say Sandra.
Okay, so the situation is correct, but unfortunately, this is actually from Survivor Panama, and this is Danielle.
Oh, really?
Which Shane and her get into this huge fight, and it's where Shane is like, it's where Ceree gives that confessional about how I should have walked away, but my dumbass had to stand there. So yes, that was that. I was trying to find a Danielle quote and I was like, I don't know what to do. So I rewatched a little bit of Panama and that was the quote I got.
And I guess, I mean, I was also in the same location because I was thinking Sandra and Pearl Island, and I believe they filmed in the same place for Exile Island.
Okay, there you go.
So I was in the right location, but wrong person.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And right situation too. Yes, it was about her not doing work at camp. Which then Bob Dog's just laying there in the shelter. And she's like, but what about Bob Dog? Anyway, whatever.
He was sleeping off that hangover from when he housed all that wine in the Casa de Charmin.
That's right. All right. Next quote. They are just a bunch. They are just bunches of babies. That's why we lose the challenges, because they are lazy.
Oh, that sounds like a Russell thing, dogging his team about losing so much.
Yes, yes, yes. Ding, ding, ding. That,
is that
one
from,
is
from Survivor Samoa when he's talking about Foa Foa.
Ding, ding, ding. Yes, indeed. That is a Russell quote from Samoa. Yes, it's just so pleasant, Russell, when he's
just
talking
about
his
babies. Why are they so down? It doesn't help that their socks got burned and their water got poured out.
Just lazy.
Babies.
Just a bunches of babies.
And also, can I also say, as a parent of a 1-year-old, babies are not lazy. They are far from it. They are hyperactive AF.
and will like dangerous, just traversing everywhere that they can reach. Like, that's what I feel like. I mean, you know, I don't have many friends that are babies, but I'm like familiar with the concept of baby. Many friends that are baby.
Only a couple.
Just a few, you know, we like hang out happy hours and
so
all
I
that.
So I don't want to generalize. Hashtag not all babies.
Hashtag not all babies. But you know, they do. They are hyperactive, you know, but hashtag not all babies. Okay. Next quote. This is what we get for being bitches.
Ooh. This is what we get for being bitches. So Russell, of course, is also prone to saying bitches, but I don't think he'd call himself a bitch. I feel like that's, that feels like something Parvati would like cheekily say, or maybe someone like Amanda. Maybe it's in response to like something the Black Widow Brigade did. I'm gonna say maybe Amanda, because she feels remorseful for doing something.
No, unfortunately, that's incorrect. It was actually Sandra.
Oh, interesting. What was this in response to?
I don't remember. So I wish I could give some context for it. I believe if I remember correctly, I think it was just some general like commiseration with some of the other players. Like, I can't exactly remember. I think they're just like all standing around. She's like complaining to them. But I was like watching these videos and listening, and I was like, oh, that's a great quote because of exactly like, I was like, ah, Michael think it's Parv or Amanda or something like that. So, haha.
Well, you got me good. I got God.
That's you got God. Next quote. What am I going to do? I'm from Montana. We don't have sharks in Montana.
I wonder who this could possibly be. Thank you for throwing this to me, much like a shark with chum. This is Amanda Kimmel.
Yeah, well, I felt bad for the other one. I was like, I'll give him one. Plus, it's just such a fun quote as well. Yes, of course, that is Amanda when they catch the shark and she sees like a white thing in the net. She's like, I'm from Montana. We don't have sharks in Montana.
Yeah, I forgot that she caught the shark in Micronesia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the net. Okay. Next quote is, the guy is a piece of garbage.
Ooh, the guy is a piece of garbage. For some reason, I'm thinking like that's a Colby or Jerry, like, you know, they were in the show in 2001. This feels a bit more of like an old school TV way to describe someone than like a bunch of bitches or a bunch of babies. What's the quote again?
The guy is a piece of garbage.
Guy is a piece of garbage. Or it could be Candace talking about Jonathan Penner. I'm going to say it's Jerry.
So this quote is about Russell Hance. Does that change your answer?
Ooh, then that is, I'm going to say that's Candace.
Rupert was the answer here. I know. Which is some beautiful language from Rupert, but not something that I would expect for him to say. So, you know, it's hard to find a non-identifiable Rupert quote. I thought this one was generic enough.
Right, that is a genuine Rupert quote then.
I mean,
should have gone with that.
That's true. It is a Rupert bot quote just waiting to happen. Your next quote is, I think if I can control how they feel, I can control how they think.
Russell.
Yeah.
This is going back to that aforementioned incident when he was pouring out the water and burning the socks on like night one.
Exactly. Yeah. So it started it all. One of the very first iconic Russell quotes. The next quote is, seven drips? Ignorant. That's ignorant is what that is. Scoop my ass.
Ooh. I'm assuming, I wonder if that's Sandra talking about, because I'm scoops and drips. I wonder if that's her talking about the coffee and the infamous Sugargate from Survivor Game Changers.
You're so close. It's JT from Sugargate, though. But yes,
dry. tribe.
Yes, exactly. Which in now rewatching that scene, oh my gosh, that was hilarious. I mean, it was hilarious at the time. It was hilarious still. When Sandra,
yeah, when Sandra got JT's ass twice.
Yes, exactly. But yes, JT was putting up, of course, he was very upset about all of the sugar being eaten and just accuses Michaela of doing so. And really, Sandra was the culprit. Your last quote is, "I never give up. I never surrender. I never admit to fear."
Oh, that sounds like Rupert. I feel like Rupert's going to get that like tattooed on his lower back or something, because that's his thesis statement.
It is Rupert. Yes. And
I think I got it with "I never give in to fear."
Yes. Oh, my goodness. This is also another quote that I think I will add to my repertoire of throw pillows, because
you're going to have to get more furniture to get these pillows built out.
I mean, I've seen beds with hundreds of pillows, so maybe that's where I go instead. Or maybe because they have to be large so you can still read it. Like, that's what I think I really liked, is just the three sequences in this quote of never giving up, never surrendering, and never admitting to fear. Lovely. Absolutely lovely. Oh, well, Mike, you are our winner, I guess.
You actually,
you did quite well for essentially, I can't even tell you how many seasons of Survivor you had the options to pick from. So well done on the quote game.
Thank you very much. I want to stay on the JT train here with the scoops and the coffee and all that, because I feel like, you know, we can't do a podcast about this episode without bringing up, obviously, what happens with the letter and JT's idol and Parv's double idol play. Because, I don't know, maybe it's because we look back on so many Survivor historical events with a very wide lens and only a couple of details about it that, I mean, at the reunion, JT is going to get regarded as doing the dumbest move in Survivor history and giving the idol away to Russell. But I really do wonder in retrospect if this was more just like something that JT knew they were going to be up against the wall and wanted to take a gamble. And it's just a gamble that didn't pay off, less so than "I want to do something extremely dumb when I'm in a position of safety," only for him to end up in extreme danger as a result.
So let's say that Russell really truly had been on the outs. This move would have been so iconic.
Yeah.
And, oh my gosh, can you believe, like, he took such a risk. That was such an amazing call. He had them read. You know, we know who Russell is because, of course, we got to see him play the season prior, and then we have that information going into the season. But if you didn't know that, you know, then it's a completely different ballgame. And I think that this move and this whole situation is just perceived so differently.
Yeah, I think it's one of these things where, because we have quote unquote perfect information, you see what everyone's thinking, we're more inclined to judge them as opposed to, like you said, when you're in the game and you can only trust so much. I mean, good on Russell and the villains for really playing it up over the last couple of episodes, complete with Rupert being like, "That women's alliance is looking very strong." They were really playing into their hand there. And Russell continues the great performance during the merge as well, really doing like the whole mea culpa. He's able to make promises on his kids that he has before, but like the heroes don't know that because none of them have ever met him nor played with him before to know that he goes back on his promises. Another thing to keep into consideration is that JT is someone who, except for like a small bit of token chains, never played with his back up against the wall. You know, I think it's so interesting to watch how Survivor players behave when they're in an underdog position and an overdog position. And JT, though he was in a minority position going into the merge in Token Sheens, was just so well liked that, you know, it was a more of a breezy path than I think some other winners. And so when he gets into the game here in Heroes versus Villains, you know, he takes charge. He's one of the people to help vote out Suri. He's part of this ironclad majority. And this is really the first time when he could potentially be facing being on the outs of something. And so I could imagine that he overcompensates a bit, this being the first time he's truly ever been in danger in his Survivor career. And as a result, he makes this big swing supported by the heroes. Let's also remember, I'm assuming he wanted to keep the idol for himself. It's when Amanda saw him find the idol, she was the one that sort of ratted him out to the other heroes, and they all come up with this idea. And so I think that what JT did is sort of a combination of him wanting to take a gamble, knowing the stalemate they were up against, and also simultaneously experiencing some hardships for the first time truly in his Survivor career.
I think it's a little, or at least the way that I see it, it's a little bit different than that, because I think there's something about being on the outs, knowing you're on the outs, and then having to just do whatever it takes to fight against being down in the numbers. But here, they're going into the merge with even numbers. So let's say they assume that the other side has an idol and they keep the idol for themselves, even more of a stalemate. So I think it's what you said in terms of wanting to get ahead more than necessarily actually playing from behind, because I think it's not that clear cut here. So the mentality, what I see at least, is trying to be aggressive, play a big game, make a big move, and really just solidify that you have the numbers going into the merge versus taking the risk of going in with a 5-5 tied vote and then hopefully playing the idol on the right person.
What do you think about Parvati's double idol play? Because again, that's a move that really reverberates as one of the quote unquote biggest moves in Survivor history. How did it feel rewatching that? Do you feel like it was a necessary move in that moment?
Well, the second one, I don't necessarily remember, and maybe you can correct me, but she plays the idol first for Sandra, then plays the second idol for Jerry, whereas Jerry is the person here that they vote for. Mm-hmm. So at least in terms of gaining control, it's necessary that she plays two. If she was only going to play one, what would she have done? Would she have played it for Jerry, or would she have played it for Sandra? Because I think, If you're talking about really trying to get to the end, yes, you have to play both idols, because then you sort of have a greater odds of gaining the numbers. Yet, like I said at the beginning of the episode, it also sets off this chain of events with Russell distrusting her, because she kept an idol hidden, and maybe she shouldn't have quote unquote wasted it here potentially, by one, giving that information away, but then also sowing these seeds of distrust, the Parvati seeds of distrust, not unlike a Russell seed. And so I think that there are a number of different ways to look at the situation.
Yeah. And let's also remember, like, yes, JT found an idol, but you know, Russell has found two at this point, that you can assume if both idols are used, there's a very good chance that you are going to find the next one. And I believe I think Russell does find the next one and he plays it, and then Sandra finds the next one. So there was a good chance it was going to come back into your alliance anyway. I think more of the error, to your point, was her not telling Russell about the second one. And I can understand from her perspective why she felt like she didn't need to. She talks about it in the confessional, how Russell is a bit megalomaniacal, how he's like, I need to be in control. I need to know everything about my alliance. And Parvati's like, I'm not your puppet. I'm a person in this alliance. It's on a need to know basis, and you don't need to know. But she perhaps underestimated how freaking paranoid Russell is, that to what you said, this really does, I think, set off the first domino that is going to lead to Russell temporarily turning on Parvati and getting rid of Danielle. Because this is just the first hint to him of, oh, Parvati's doing things without me. Maybe I should look out for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think because he talks about these, you know, the dumbass girls, right? He's like, he even in this episode, I believe, talks about, I would love to just keep this idol for me, but I have to keep all these dumbass girls safe also. And so if that's how he perceives the situation, then Parv playing that idol really shakes the perception or his interpretation of what the power dynamics are there, because no longer is she this helpless being who needed his idol. She not only played the idol in an opposite way that he, at least, I mean, it was successful, but in the opposite way that he suggests. So he, one, didn't listen to her in the original idol play, but then two, kept the idol hidden and went ahead and played it without informing him at all. And so that is just a complete destruction of what Russell originally perceived the situation to be with his alliance.
It's such a fun TV moment as well, you know, to watch. It's always fun when watching an idol play to watch, like, people's faces fall. And so, like you said, when Parvati plays the idol on Sandra, the heroes are like, this is fine. I'm totally cool with this. And then when she pops one out for Jerry and you just see JT go, damn it. And everyone's faces fall because they know those are who they threw the votes towards. And JT knows as a result, the votes are probably bouncing back onto him with, it's tough to determine if this was his own idol technically, because the little green men are pretty indistinguishable, but it's still, while again, I think we could maybe put some merit into JT's thinking at the time, it's a fantastic storyline to essentially get voted out with your own idol.
I think to me, though, because the other biggest mistake of all time, at least from CBS's perspective, is Eric giving up individual immunity, considering how many times we've seen that clip played. But to me, the JT logic actually makes more sense here than Eric's. And so for me, if I'm talking about what's the worst move, I know that's not the question, but I would probably have to say Eric giving up the immunity necklace.
Well, I think it's also a thing of, you know, Rob talks all the time about how he feels like the worst move is something like Wu taking Tony, because I think the further you are from the end, the more possibility there is for something to happen. Because to your point, you know, this happens at the final 10, Eric's happens at the final 5. And I personally think that Eric had his own understandably salient motivations behind what he did. That might be a bit unfounded objectively, but from his own perspective, made sense. But because he was so close to the end, it's more of an all-out error, because it's like, okay, if you did this, then you only had, what, like two more rounds to get through. As with JT, you know, if he does this, he may get voted out, but also there's so much other stuff that could happen along the way that it maybe wouldn't look like such a big mistake, considering how much more room to play there was after 10.
That's a good point, because let's say Parvati actually plays the idol for herself. Right. Then you go to a deadlock, which is a 5-5 split vote. And then who knows what happens then? You know, maybe JT somehow is able to survive that.
Or he flips again. Remember, he was the one to. Well, if the votes are against him, then it would be a deadlock and he would be safe.
Oh, yes. Right. Exactly. Oh my gosh. And then, you know, then I think we don't necessarily look back on that move as being that bad, because yes, it didn't go the way that he intended it to go, but at least he was able to survive that tribal council. I think part of the extra hurt is that he is the one that goes home here.
Yeah. I mean, it could be a thing, much like Zeke sort of totes in Millennials versus Gen X, of like, he could say, I got four heroes to vote with me and draw rocks with me. You know, they look at these people sort of surrounding me. Cause yeah, I couldn't. Maybe Candace flips, because I know next episode is when she's really going to start jumping ship, because she feels like the heroes are slowly sinking. But I don't know if she would do that particularly at the merge. And who knows, maybe Sandra flips on them in that moment, because I don't know if Sandra would be the type of person to draw a rock.
That's true, actually. That's the scenario that I can see, because I think Candace was, you know, because JT goes, I think is part of the onus for then why she starts to dig in her heels in terms of wanting to flip and votes out Amanda, I believe. But yeah, oh my gosh, Sandra, oh my God, we don't go to rocks, Sandra flips, what a crazy season. Oh my gosh, well, just, that would be so fun.
Not to mention that actually what they try to do with Russell here, because I think the conventional wisdom was like, oh, they thought that they had Russell with him no matter what. But no, they were actually trying to do with Russell what was successfully done to people like Dreams and Will Sims, where they quote unquote tested a potential flipper by giving them a false name. So I think the heroes thought, okay, worst case scenario, Parvati doesn't play her idol. Russell still thinks he's voting with us, and it turns into 5-4-1. But that turned out not to be the case. They didn't know that Russell was as entrenched with the villains as he was, despite Rupert and Sandra's protestations.
This is why this episode is so fun. Because there's so many different perspectives, so many different ways this could have gone. And the way it did go, I think, is ultimately the most entertaining. But it's just adding to the reasons why Heroes Villains is such an iconic season.
Well, we got one more game here today on the B&B. And this is another game from Sarah from Sydney, who brought a game, a pretty difficult game last week, but still a lot of fun. This one's going to be a little different. So obviously, Liana, this episode was all about the idea of a women's alliance, a dreaded women's alliance. So what's going to happen is Sarah has given out a list of famous trios of women. I'm going to name two and see if you can fill in the blanks here.
Okay, this is from all of Survivor
and outside of Survivor.
and outside of Survivor history. Oh, great. Good. Love it. Loving it.
Well, speaking of that, actually, let's start with number one here. Amanda Parvati blank.
Suri.
That is correct. Final three of okay. Survivor Micronesia.
Whew, okay. All right. All right. Maybe this won't be so bad.
All right. How about this one? Eliza, Angelica.
Oh, oh, shoot. This is from Vanuatu, right?
I don't know.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Okay. This is where my Survivor history knowledge is really true. To like, talk about Twish. Wait, you said Anne? Who is the other
Eliza?
Name?
Angelica.
Oh, no, it's not. It's from Hamilton. Oh, my God. The Scots. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. No. Oh, my God. Oh, Shannon is going to freaking kill me. Why am I totally blanking on the other Skylar sister's name? Oh my God. Oh, crap. Crap, 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 crap.
We're almost there.
Okay, wait, hold on. Peggy!
There we go. Oh, you were right there.
Okay, all right.
And Peggy, the most infamous two words in the English language.
And Peggy. Yes, okay.
I was so excited for a second that you had been led astray by Survivor Vanuatu.
I was like, who's Angelica?
Yeah,
was
Angelica.
Like, am I forgetting? So, like, was she voted out for like early? I was like, no.
Yeah, you know, actually, she sort of like get left behind at Ponderosa before the season. Poor Angelica.
Ah, yes. Poor Angelica.
All right. Here's the next one. Heather, and blank.
What?
Heather, and blank.
The only thing I can think of is the Heathers.
Okay, do you have a guess?
Were they actually the Heather? Were those the characters' names? What is going on? This is not. Is this Survivor?
No, the previous one was a Survivor either.
Is it Heather?
That's correct.
Okay, so it is the Heathers.
Yes,
okay,
it's the Heathers
sorry,
from the movie Heathers.
Like, outside of Survivor thing is really like mess. I'm like, does a world exist outside
My
of Survivor?
God, I never realized.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so those are obviously the Heathers from the movie Heathers who all had the name of Heather.
Yeah, okay.
All right, here's your next one. Monica, Rachel.
Oh, and Phoebe.
There you go, from Friends. Did you ever resonate with any particular female friend over another?
I never watched Friends.
Really? So you somehow knew
it? I know. No, so I never watched Friends. I never watched How I Met Your Mother. Because I never met your mother or any of those shows. So I'm currently watching How I Met Your Mother. I'm in the middle of season 3 right now.
What are your thoughts?
So this is... Well, okay. So first of all, I missed the pilot episode. Okay. So I started in episode 2. Well, because, so here's what happened. So, I was in a hotel room and it was on TV, but it was the second episode and I started watching and then Pui was like, oh, we should like, he really likes How I Met Your Mother. So he was like, oh, well, we should watch it. And then we never went back and watched the first episode. So now it's been too long. So I'm going to go back and watch it at the, like when I finally finish the series.
Interesting. So you're going to go watch the entire series except for the first episode. And then when you're done, go back and watch the first episode.
That is correct.
Yes. I feel like it should be a new way to watch TV is like you go through the entire series and then you rewatch or watch for the first time the pilot to see how it compares.
Yeah, I like it. And especially considering I've heard a bit of the disappointment and downturn with the series. So I think that that's going to be particularly interesting.
Yeah, you won't end it on a bum note, technically, because you're ending with the beginning.
That's right. Exactly. So it'll be like a little bit more uplifting. We'll get the, you know, because I do know like some of the things that happen. I know that Ted, who sucks, by the way, stole the blue French horns. Mm-hmm. Like I know those sort of general things. So anyway, yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Do you think that if and when Survivor finishes after the final season, they should re-air Borneo due to that logic?
Well, this is a little bit of a crossover, but we talked about this in our Big Brother B&B this week, where I hope it's not a rerun. So I don't know if that would be the casual's comments if they do a rerun.
What's
of Borneo,
with these graphics?
What's the thing? This quality is terrible.
All right. Here's your next one. Kelly, Michelle, blank.
Kelly, Michelle, blank.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Beyonce?
Yeah, that is Destiny's Child.
All I could think about was Michelle Fitzgerald and Kelly Wentworth. And ooh. I was like, is this like a sequester reference? Like, what
all
is happening?
All the sequesters, right, U.S. Survivor players.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? We've gotten references to Hamilton. Mm-hmm.
Heathers, all the H's were taken care of.
So really, yeah, when I gave you the game about, oh, well, you know, quotes from all of these seasons of Survivor, at least you had a finite number of answers.
Listen, you got to think fourth dimensionally with some of these games.
No, I love this.
All right, I'll give you one more here.
Okay.
Shay, Juju.
Oh, Ms. Cracker.
Yes. No, Sarah wrote here Mix Cracker, which sounds like an even better name.
Wicca, wicca, what? It's Ms. Cracker.
And that just sounds like how Ms. Cracker would rap as well. So good impression. Yes, indeed. The final three from the recently wrapped RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 5. She did list a tiebreaker. That's not necessary, but she wanted to see if you knew the names of the March sisters from Little Women, perhaps one of the most famous women's alliances in all of literature.
Ooh, well, good thing we did not have to go to a tiebreaker. Because I do not think that I could name that off the top of my head. I don't even think I had to read Little Women when I was in school.
Have you watched any of the like myriad adaptations of it?
No, I have not. I know one of them is Meg, right?
Yeah, so there's Meg, there's Amy, there's Beth, and there's
and
Jo.
Beth. Okay, yes, yes. Oh, yes, okay, yep. Mm-hmm.
So those are the March sisters. That was truly the women's alliance that the heroes needed to fear, not the villains, though they ended up getting screwed in the end. But good job, Liana. You got them all right. So you aced this trio-tastic quiz.
Yeah, once I got the concept of it's not just Survivor, because I kept going back to that that well. But yes, that was really fun. And it's fun to, you know, play a game that's not necessarily Survivor. Like, I do know a few other things. It may take me a while, but I may know them.
Yeah, it may take a while for you to actually watch Friends, but damn it if you don't know their names.
That's right. Come through, pop culture.
I love it. So to finish things off, as we've been doing every week for the past few weeks, we want to take a second to highlight a specific charity on this week's podcast. This week, we are going to the Natural Resources Defense Council. We talked about this already a bit on our Big Brother podcast, but Liana, for the uninformed, can you talk a little bit about the NRDC and what they do?
Yes. So their whole thing is we need to safeguard the earth. So we were inspired by all of the banana talk. We have to protect the bananas because the villains won't. So we need to be the heroes here and safeguard our earth. So they do things like related to climate change or wildlife preservation and all of those types of things. And so that's their big picture. And they do so much work regarding a number of different things because we all live on the earth together. And so it's important that we protect it and we give a an earth for all of our baby friends to live in
all
in
those
future.
All the various baby friends that we have.
Yes.
And yeah, we're all Rupert in the situation, right? Like, as much as we might, would there are people that are taking our resources and just gallivanting about them and not necessarily worrying about the repercussions that they leave behind. And in this case, we want to make sure we speak up about it and help people from the debaucherous villains that might be unfortunately polluting our earth and the people who live on it.
That's right. So if you are interested in donating, you can go to nrdc.org. There is a big orange donate button up at the top right corner. You can click donate and that will send us on our way to help protecting our earth.
The reason I'm laughing is because in our Big Brother podcast, when we made this plug, Liana could not stop saying donut instead of donate.
I think I was just hungry.
Yeah, the hunger was creeping in there. Should have gone for some spare bananas. But yeah, be sure to check all that out, and we'll keep plugging some more causes as we move on here. Next week, we are sort of staying on the Rupert and Sandra train, though Rupert is actually not in next week's episode. His boot is very much on the minds of the castaways in the aforementioned Survivor Pearl Islands. We are going to episode 11, titled The Great Lie. Liana, we're talking dead grandma next week.
Yes, I can't wait. It's going to be a blast. Again, this whole series, it's been such a fun reminder of what Survivor brings us and brought us, because, you know, I myself included like to complain. We kind of get down on Modern Survivor. It's been a rough couple years to be a Survivor fan, but this is why I love the game. And we're talking dead grandma. Nothing could be more fun. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the most infamous moments in Survivor history. We have a loved ones challenge to talk about. Wouldn't be a Survivor rewatch series without a loved ones challenge. I also believe this is the episode where, in retaliation for Rupert getting voted out, Sandra dumps out the fish. Truly, you know, one of her big sabotage moments, in addition to Sugargate, as we mentioned before. I think this is also where Sandra has to want to spy on Johnny Fairplay and Burton as well.
Oh, this is so good. And this is where, oh my gosh, what was her name? Was it Christy who, like, just met the guy?
Or, oh, no, that was
not,
that was
actually
Dara.
Just met the guy. Oh,
Dara's,
yes,
Dara's boyfriend who knew nothing about her. We had to talk about sort of like a newlywed game for the loved ones visit. This is also the episode where, I'm looking it up now, I forgot that this is the first episode, I think maybe the only episode, where someone won immunity. Jeff Probst said, hold up, bro, I actually got this wrong. This is when Burton spells liaison wrong during the word search challenge. So there's a lot of new stuff to talk about in Survivor here. In my personal favorite season, Pearl Islands, I am so excited to go back to Panama.
They need to make the walk the plank thing come back for something. It doesn't even have to be a loved one's visit, but just the fact that they had to send people off the plank and jump the plank. I know it fits with the whole pirate, the swashbuckling pirate theme, but it should come back regardless.
So yeah, we're going to be back next week with a guest or two. We'll remain that TBD for just a big fun announcement. But yeah, we've only got 3 weeks left of this. You know, the Big Brother season is coming into view. The headlights are coming around the corner, but we are receding from our Survivor rewatch. But like Liana said, this has been so much fun to time travel through Survivor history, including jumping off from an infamous episode of Survivor off the plank into another infamous episode of Survivor. Liana, give us some plugs here. You mentioned our Big Brother podcasting beforehand. Talk to us about that and the other stuff you're doing on the network.
That's right. So first, you can find me on Twitter at Liana RHAP. Mostly now starting to switch gears to talk about Big Brother. Mike and I recorded a BBRHAP BNB talking speculation about the cast of Big Brother 22. I also did one of the hypothetically speaking podcasts talking about my brother Cody Calafiore. And I believe Mike will be doing one as well. And then for all you 90-day Fiance fans, we are starting a 90 Day Fiance podcast here on the RHAP network. The aforementioned Puya is going to be breaking everything down week by week.
Please call him by the proper name.
Of course, yes. Love it. Loving it. Puyati will be speaking each week about sort of this week in 90 Day Fiancé, but for the first week, broke it up into two different podcasts. So I'm going to be talking with him as a guest about Happily Ever After, and then he'll be talking about The Other Way. And it's very own podcast, so those are both out there. But yeah, really fun time. Oh, and Drag Race. Oh my gosh, how could I forget? I'm talking with our guest, Corey Cool, this week, which I'm thinking about when this gets released. But whatever. Anyway, check it out. Doesn't matter. Canada's Drag Race is what we are discussing with, of course, Beth Amont, and then Corey Cool from The Amazing Race will be our guest. Yeah, look out for that.
Reality TV is surprisingly popping right now. I think Big Brother is actually the big one, but the magnitude is definitely felt with Canada's Drag Race. You can follow me at A Mike Bloom Type. Speaking of reality TV, we are halfway through the first season of Tough as Nails, the newest reality hit from Phil Kogan. So myself and Jessica Leese and Rob got together with the aforementioned Phil Kogan to talk through the episode. As Liana mentioned, I'll also be getting together with Rob and Taryn and a member of the class of 2020 to talk through two of the bigger wild cards, I would say, for a prospective Big Brother All-Stars cast, Amber Borzotra and Christmas Abbott. It's going to be certainly an interesting conversation that I'm assuming is out by the time you're listening to this. Another really fun Big Brother thing that I did is I took the opportunity to get together three really fun RHAP personalities in Nick Iadanza, Bryce Isaiah, and Shannon Gus to talk about a prospective Big Brother All-Stars cast. The thing is, these people are casuals at best. So we've had a really, really fun podcast where essentially I showed them photos of the prospective cast and they had to guess who they were, what their story is, what they did to get onto All Stars. It was an incredibly entertaining time. That should be in your podcast feeds right now. There is also a YouTube video because there is a visual component of it. It's sort of like a cousin of Issa Look by breaking down the photos. I highly recommend it, especially for you Big Brother fans that are looking for a casual perspective. On top of all the usual stuff that I'm doing between Lost and Beyond Top Chef, there's a lot of stuff going on there as we're round the corner on these last few episodes of our Survivor Rewatch series. If you want to send in games, please do. Thank you so much again to Sarah from Sydney and K-Tom for sending in these games. They were super fun to play. You can tweet ideas to us, hashtag RHAPBNB, or email them to us, RHAPBNB@gmail.com. Literally anything you're inspired by, we'll talk about. So sky is the absolute limit, or seize the limit as we jump into it, following some incorrect answers from our respective loved ones. That's going to do it for this week on the BNB. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes, and Will from America for his fan fantastic theme song. We'll be back next week with some guest or guests talking about The Great Lie, episode 11 of Survivor Pearl Islands. But for now, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana got to play some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB. Mike and Liana got to play some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB.
You can say for free.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.